A1.
Number 16B.
So, it is good to awake ourselves to see what is really the main object of Christian Science and what is a secondary object of devoting our heart to Christian Science. The main object is to seek truth for truth's sake. And in that lies the dominant power. And with that dominant power, we can handle latent error. And when we can handle latent error, then that latent error has no chance to express itself in visible error and audible sin. Now, I come to another point about science. Namely, we have to see that science is creative. This is a very important point. And I want to show you this sense through the definition of science from the Oxford Dictionary. The Oxford Dictionary more or less substantiates the meaning of science as given in the definition at the beginning of this talk. But it complements the meaning of science by showing really that science should also be creative. Let me read this definition. The first part really is very similar to the one I have given from Frankenwagner. It says that science is a branch of study which is concerned either with a connected body, you see again it's connected, body of demonstrated truth, or with observed facts systematically classified and more or less collegiated, you know, brought together.
Yeah.
You have also the dictionary, Merriam-Webster's dictionary, collegiate.
Yes, collegiate.
You see, from that word, collegiate.
Yes.
So, what is the past participle? Collegiated? Collegiated? Well, I guess you don't know your language. I'm so glad that I'm not blamed if I don't know it. So, and more or less collegiated by being brought under general laws. See, again, related and brought back to laws. And now comes the new point. And which includes trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truth within its own domain. So you see that the science really is the basis for new discoveries. But really only then when we investigate the subject in its science and have found a scientific basis, that really includes trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truth. So that each one who begins to grasp science, Christian science, in its scientific nature, becomes a discoverer and is able to discover new truth within its domain, within the domain of this principle, of this divine principle. With other words, we should be able to draw new conclusions when we have understood science as a science. So that when we begin to understand Christian Science as a science, we become pioneers, discoverers, and are no more dependent always on other people. To be dependent what other people have found out, to listen to them indefinitely all our life through, to read what others have written, to be dependent on other people for help. We begin to be discover ourselves. And it is always a sign that one has understood the science of Christian Science when one is able to pierce forward and to begin to see new truth in its domain. But it's always within its domain. There are new truths which always are correlated to that which is stated fundamentally as the divine principle and its system. It is not adding something to the system, but it's revealing what this divine principle really is. So we are asked really to be pioneers and discoverers. You see, Mrs. Eddy asks us to be that. She says, to one born of the flesh, however, divine science must be a discovery. And so we must discover, each one of us, this vast subject of divine science. We begin to realize how vast this subject is, without limits. Mrs. Eddy speaks of science vast, the song of songs. And it is really a song of songs, because the moment one has touched its science, it is as if that understanding would lead us always to new views, to new horizons, and it's just one song of songs. She says in her textbook, the time cometh when the spiritual origin of man, the divine science which just ushered Jesus into human presence, will be understood and demonstrated. You see, she not only says that God is the origin of man. Here, the moment thought touches divine science, one begins to see that divine science is the origin of man. The divine science which ushered Jesus into human presence. That, she says, is the spiritual origin of man. And suddenly we begin to realize, you see, that God, after all, was just an abstraction which we had to use in order to understand reality. But that finally we begin to see that the other name for God is divine science, the understanding of the divine infinite calculus. And in the measure, really, we begin to understand the divine infinite calculus, we usher ourselves into our true manhood. We give birth to our true manhood. And so the true birth goes on. This also shows us, really, the fact that it isn't, so to say, God that reveals a new truth, but science. It is quite interesting to see that in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy never uses the verb reveals in connection with God, that she would never say God reveals, but that she would always say that God reveals through science, that science reveals. She says in No and Yes, science reveals and interprets God and man. And this term reveals about 40 times is used in the textbook together with science or the scientific idea or scientific truth. That reveals. And this is so important to see because the religious thought always tries to get revelation without having a scientific consciousness, without having his consciousness be purified by science and scientific understanding. But only a scientific understanding is really transparent for God's revelation. Naturally, it is so that revelation comes from the divine principle, but we can only accept and be aware of this revelation through a scientific consciousness. Right at the beginning of this class, we saw how Dinuy would say that there are always two sources of new knowledge. The first, he said, was direct revelation, but that was open to very few. And over the last thousands and thousands of years, we could see there were only few who really had divine revelation, like the patriarchs, like the prophets, like Jesus, like Mrs. Eddy. But that most people who speak that they had a revelation, they didn't have a real revelation. That only something which was in their unconscious consciousness came up to their consciousness. But revelation is only that which depicts the nature of God in its science. And so revelation really comes best through science. And it is a fact which everybody can experience, that the more he has a scientific consciousness, a scientific understanding, he is able to receive new vision, new insight, a higher view, broader horizon, because science reveals. So really, revelation is infinite. A revelation has never an end, comes never to a final stop. God is infinite, so revelation is infinite. And so often Mrs. Eddy really is misunderstood in that respect. Because in the chapter Science, Theology and Medicine, she has stated, God had been graciously preparing me during many years for the reception of this final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing. Yes, she has stated in her textbook her final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific metaphysical healing. She has stated finally that the divine principle is the healer, that all healing must be an outcome of an understanding of the divine principle. But with that statement, she doesn't say that all what she has written is the last word on anything that is concerned with God, Christ, and man. She just stated that finally she has seen that the divine principle, God, is really the medicine of man. And not human thought like Quimby, but not esoteric magic like with Mesmer, that not matter like with drugs is the principle of healing. She found and stated the final principle of healing. But that doesn't mean that she felt that she has stated everything that ever can be stated and that there is nothing to be revealed. On the contrary, she said, the author made no effort to embellish, elaborate, or treat in full detail so infinite a theme. She says, I have only bluntly stated the text, and it was not her job to write infinitely about the infinite subject. Because on the infinite subject we can write infinitely, just as Jesus had said so in the Gospel of John, or where John says, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. He could see that the statement of God's revelation is infinite, and that not even the world could contain all the books that could be written on it. Even more, in the chapter on Christian Science Practice, she indicates that future generations will state and prove the higher meanings of the system. She says, under the side note, a higher discovery, she writes, many years ago, the author made a spiritual discovery, the scientific evidence of which has accumulated to prove that the divine mind produces in man health, harmony, and immortality. So she says, I have discovered something. Then she goes on and says, gradually, this evidence will gather momentum and clearness. She didn't say, gradually, this evidence has gathered momentum, as if she would say, there was a development in my consciousness and that development showed me a higher, and always higher revelation. No, she looks into the future and says, gradually this evidence will gather momentum and clearness until it reaches its culmination of scientific statement and proof. So she's looking forward into the future and can see that the science of what she has presented will be stated more clearly, that a higher discovery will come which does not contradict what she has said, but which discovers in a greater degree of more perfect, I wouldn't say perfect, on more detailed and more explicit statement what this divine principle really is. So let's see that we go on and ever on, that revelation and discovery goes on and ever on, though it will always be about this final statement that principle is really the healer of everything. There will be no new discovery which will say that something else but the divine, something else next to the divine principle will be the healer. But the statement of this principle, the science of this principle, the statement of what the science of this principle is, will unfold and unfold and unfold. And it has unfolded since Mrs. Eddy left us. Though it is stated in or hidden in the Christian Science textbook. It is all there, just as Mrs. Eddy's discovery of Christian Science was already all there in the Bible. Now, another and last question is really, how can this science be taught? Having stated that we deal in Christian Science with a science, what this science is, we still can ask ourselves, how can this science be taught? Because we know that up to now, the general view was that religion can only be taught through a church and its channels, through church services, through all the institutions of the church. All through the ages, the church was the teaching channel, that channel through which the divine being was translated to the layman. It's an old belief, and therefore we can't expect that everybody just can put aside this old belief and see that science really can only be taught through scientific means. Like produces like, but like interprets itself only through like and not through something unlike. Well, science interprets and teaches itself only through scientific methods. And the scientific methods are not churches, buildings. It is quite interesting to see, really, that the term church is mentioned in the Christian Science textbook only a few times, and very often in a negative way, and only in a few instances in a positive way. And when it is mentioned in a positive way, then it means something else than the common sense of the term gifts to church. In the Christian Science textbook, there is no allusion to building a church, to organizing a church, to having a so-called organized church. Not one allusion. On the contrary, the term church is lifted out of its organized sense, of its institutional sense. And Mrs. Eddy defines church and says, our church is built on the divine principle. It's not built on a piece of ground. It's built on the divine principle love. And she says we can unite with this church not through becoming a member of an organization, but we can unite with the church only. And she means only. And then she says only, she means only. As we are newborn of spirit. That's our membership in the true church. To be newborn of spirit. And as we reach the life, which is truth, and the truth, which is life, by bringing forth the fruits of love, we can see what church is. It is built on the divine principle, shown to be something with which we can unite only in spirit by being born anew, and therefore by bringing forth the results of life, truth, and love. She says, Jesus established his church and maintained his mission on a spiritual foundation of Christ healing. That was his church. Jesus never organized the church. He never organized a community of people. That was the mistake his followers made. And that was that which Mrs. Eddy said she wouldn't like to make too. In the glossary, she defines church as the structure of truth and love. Whatever rests upon and proceeds from the divine principle. You see, again, the church is a structure not of walls and stones, but a structure of truth and love. That is the true sense of church. And that is the true sense Jesus had of church. When he said to Peter that he would build on this rock the church. What was that rock? It was because Peter answered him before and said, Thou art the Christ. Peter was the first one to state that Jesus was the Christ. He was the first one to perceive the Christ nature of what Jesus taught and lived and practiced. And he said, that Christ understanding is really the church. That is the true church. So, an organized church, and humanly organized church, is not the true church, and has nothing to do with Christian Science. But it is quite evident that one can't just get rid of a thousand-year-long belief in humanity from one day to the other. Mrs. Eddy tried it at first, and she said in her first edition of the textbook that she will not make the mistake that the disciples of Jesus made, that she would organize a church. Then she began to realize that she was asking too much. And being a woman, and being wise and tender, she was able to make concessions were good to make. Just as Moses had the same attitude, he saw the reality on the Mount of Vision. But when he came down to the people couldn't look at him. They were blinded by the bigness of the vision. And so he had to break down his vision and form some sort of organization which would fetter mortal mind to a certain extent so that mortal mind wouldn't go wild with freedom. And Mrs. Eddy saw the same thing. She saw that if she wanted to perpetuate her discovery, she had first to fetter mortal mind, carnal mind, into some fetter, and therefore gave that Christian Science manual, that wonderful manual which fetters mortal mind so that it cannot go wild. But it was always a let it be so now. When we read in her writings under which circumstances and which motive she would organize anything, you can read that it was always let it be so now. just as Jesus said, let it be so now, when he let himself be baptized by John the Baptist. But he didn't say that it will be forever. And so Mrs. Eddy never had in view that the church organization would be an everlasting necessity or institution for upholding the teaching of Christian Science. It was really the schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, as Paul would say. You see, even in biblical times, Abraham saw already the value of faith, of spiritual understanding, but the people couldn't grasp it. And so, after Abraham, Moses had to come as a schoolmaster to bring them unto Christ, until the time would be ready where people would understand and the signs of Christian Science, would appreciate the signs of Christian Science, and would begin to realize that each one is united with that principle directly through his Christ understanding, and does not need any intermediary like a church or a church organization. So we can see that Mrs. Eddy's concession to have a church organization through which the Christian Science thought would be propagated, that it was, let it be so now. But what after the now? And therefore we can ask, what was Mrs. Eddy's sense of the future after the now? The now doesn't go eternally. What is Mrs. Eddy's sense of the future? And Mrs. Eddy's sense of the future was to see that science can only be taught through scientific channels, through schools, through teaching, through learning. Therefore she would say, the education of the future must be instruction in spiritual science against the material, symbolic, counterfeit sciences. She didn't say the future must be that everybody must be a member of a human organization with all its pros and cons. But the future will be an education, an instruction in spiritual science. And she could see that Christian Science must be taught in schools. And by saying taught in schools, I don't think that her first form of teaching Christian Science in school would be that it would be in the state school or public school, but that it is taught in a way as the school teach such a subject. Oh gosh. Or she would say, in Unity of Good, in less than another 50 years, his name will be magnified in the apprehension of the new subject. He was speaking about divine science. The platoon of Christian Science, she says, must be thoroughly drilled. The plainer manual of the spiritual armament. You see, she saw there will be another manual than the church manual, namely that plainer manual of spiritual armament, where the platoons of Christian Science are thoroughly drilled in understanding the science of Christian Science.